up, and I'm not sure who was supposed to speak tonight, but we do have a member that just celebrated. And I asked her at the beginning of the meeting, and she said yes. So I've known this person since they showed up at the rooms, at least here. And we butted heads a few times in her early recovery. And it was interesting. And I watched her grow in this program. And I watched her catch fire with this program differently than the first, when she first walked into these rooms, at least this time. And really get a hold of this, at least from what I can see in the conversations that we've had. And it's a pleasure to have her as a group member of the Highlands and Islands and to be of service with her in the Highlands and Islands. And without further ado, Christine, would you share with us?
Thank you, Jay. Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm Christina, I'm an addict.
Hello, Christine.
Now, barring accidents and what some people might call acts of God, I'm usually in every Highlands and Islands meeting, and I came here today expecting to hear a speaker. But when I came in and I saw there was only like half a dozen regulars, I thought, and I had a feeling this might happen. And to be quite honest, asking me at the last minute is the very best thing you can do. This time around, I've just celebrated 5 years clean. And this time round, I have found it much, I'm much more of a listener. I think that is what I've discovered. I spend, you know, probably 95 at least percent of my time in meetings listening. Don't mind doing a reading at the beginning of the meeting. But I really listen, and that's where I learn. That's where I hear other people's struggles and triumphs and how they deal with that clean. And that really is, you know, that is a change, because when I first came in and when I first came into these meetings, I was bursting to share. So a lot of you, most of you, all of you maybe, know quite a lot about me. I first came to Highlands and Islands, has been going for about 12 years, and I probably came 10 years ago. And I had been clean for 13 years and fairly recently relapsed when I first joined these meetings. And I was in a bad way. And not well at all. And a crazy newcomer. A difficult newcomer. And, you know, Ellie and... I think Ellie's own, and Jay, of course... And Steve all saw me go through that, you know, getting a few months clean, going back out again for a couple of days. And I began to lose hope. Well, I didn't begin to lose hope. I lost hope. And I knew I was powerless. I knew that every time I picked up, I might not live through it. And I'm not being dramatic. That was the way it was in, you know, the last 5 years of my period of relapsing. I got a criminal record for the first time at 60 years old. I ended up in psychiatric hospital for the first time at 66, well, just under 60 years old. And I had lost everything. And step one was obvious to me. I was completely powerless. And at that time, I had no defence against the first one. And it wasn't until I'd started the steps so many people were different, so many times with different sponsors, and I just knew. I knew that I understood powerlessness, but what I needed was a defence against the first one. And when I got a my previous sponsor, I talked through all this with her, and we decided we'd do a quick step one and quickly move on to step two. And I do share this in meetings, especially when people are in and out and really struggling. For me, step two was as important as step one because I needed that thing that I'd completely lost, which was hope. And for me, that's what step two gives me. It gives me it gives me hope that I can be returned to sanity. And so that's how, I'm not going to go through all the steps, don't worry. But that's how this recovery got going. I got to step two, and somehow I got the hope again. And the belief, what came with that hope was the belief that I could recover. Me, Christine, who had fucked up so badly, I could still recover again. And I've been clean since then, and I've always been champing at the bit to do service because I got so much from doing service in my previous recovery. And I always wanted service positions as soon as I possibly could. But this time round, I decided to wait. I waited until I was a year clean before I took on any service. And then, of course, I took on too much, which is my observations tell me that I'm not the only one who does that. And but however, I've actually done more than my year. Usually in the UK, service positions are for a year, and that's the sort of culture. And I did more than my year in any of these service positions. And for me, there's a really important thing about, one of the really important things and the most and one of the most attractive things to me in any is the fact that it's a wee program. It's run by addicts for addicts, if you like. Although we try not to use the word run too often in service. But that I could be sure that every person in these meetings had the same problem as I did. And what comes with that, for me, service goes hand in hand with that because no one does it for us. We do the service. I'm pretty sure everyone in this room's got service positions of some kind or other. And, you know, that's what keeps our fellowship alive and free, because we don't need anybody else to do that for us. And you're not going to be getting 45 minutes out of me, folks. But, you know, doing service, having a sponsor, and I've had to struggle with that this year. Because my previous sponsor, I got on really well with her. She was great. But the trouble was, she was in another hemisphere. And she took on a new job role, and she had kids. The result, you know, she just, in the end, I felt she just didn't have time. Anytime I phoned her, I could hear the stress in her voice, and I felt, you know, I was adding to her stress, so I really didn't want to do that. And I decided, and the time zone problem, of course, exacerbated that. And I knew I'd had a few issues come up that I hadn't been able to get hold of her to speak to when I needed to. So I let go of that sponsor. And actually, I don't even know if she's in meetings anymore. I don't see her in any, even the any at home meetings that I go to. But that doesn't mean she's not going to meetings. But I found it really difficult to get somebody, because I was on step 8, and I didn't want to go back in and start from step 1 again with a new sponsor, which is what most sponsors want you to do. But I did find somebody, and I like her recovery. It's very, very different from mine. And I asked her to be my sponsor, and we were getting to know each other. But when we started doing the step work, I really felt that it wasn't a good fit. So I finally had the conversation with that lovely lady last week, and I'm now on the hunt for another sponsor. Asking my hack, because, you know, service, sponsorship, these are the backbones of any recovery. In my previous recovery, I always had a sponsor, and I always had sponsees. And these days, I don't actually have any sponsees at the moment. I tend to take on the people that sound like they might have trouble getting a sponsor for one reason or another. And But these are, you know, this is in the steps. This is how it works. It says it in how it works. You know, we hear that reading at the beginning of a lot of meetings. And, you know, it doesn't say come to meetings and it'll work. Although it does to some extent. It's kept me afloat this last year. And talking of this last year, I'm incredibly grateful to Highlands and Islands Group in particular, but also to my second home, which I don't get to that much anymore, down at any at home. But as you know, I had an accident in February, broke my leg, had to get surgery, it all went wrong. I was in hospital for much longer than expected. But it was two things I told them when I first got there. You know, I got there in an ambulance with a broken femur, where instead of one long bone, I had two shorter bones that were crossed in my leg. You know, it was nasty. And as soon as I got there, the first thing was get someone to take care of my animals. So that was the first thing to be arranged. And I'd been out at returning home from a dog walk when it happened, and I didn't have my phone on me. I know mobiles, you're supposed to carry them with you, but I haven't learned that. I'm old, I just haven't learned that. And I didn't have a phone on me. And the second thing I asked for, once I knew the dogs had been taken care of, my phone. And my good friend turned up with my phone. And as soon as I had it in my hand, I was at the next meeting because I'm blessed now. I don't have to get to a meeting in order to get recovered. I don't have to get outside and be, I don't have to be able to walk to get to a meeting. And I was in lots of meetings throughout my stay in hospital. And people stayed in touch with me and reached out to me. And I didn't, there was no one who didn't, who wasn't willing to be there for me that comes to Highlands and Islands. It was absolutely fantastic. And the thing is, because I've been without a sponsor for a year, more or less, and I'd been telling myself, I don't work this program. I'm not doing enough. I'm not working hard enough at this program. I'm not a good recovering addict. I'm doing it wrong. Everything that happened in hospital, and there was a lot, emergency blood transfusions, getting taken down to surgery, and my heart rate was so low, they checked everything and they couldn't do it until they gave me blood, and being, every next thing that came up, I had the program and I just thought, well, this is, I can get through this, and by about my second week in hospital, what was left in my veins had completely collapsed. And I had, as a consequence of my using, and I had to have, because they were taking blood constantly, they were putting drugs into me, antibiotics, and giving me blood transfusions, and I needed veins. So they had to put what they called a central lining, and I won't go into it, but it was quite scary and horrible. But I was aware at that point that they probably know I've been using those veins for something else, And but I know I'm not responsible for my addiction, but I'm responsible for my recovery. So, I don't beat myself up about these things anymore. I got through it. One incident, one emergency, one bad blood test, at a time. And now I'm walking. My mobility is back to where it was before I had the accident. I have learned a wee bit though, I'm a lot more careful. And if my hip, which is the original problem, is very painful, I'll get on my scooter and take the dog for a walk that way these days. But I got through it all. There was no, I felt no sense of drama. But once the animals had been taken care of, I was a bit dramatic before that. And, I just went with it. And that has to be the program, because I couldn't have done that. So at one point, I didn't have a lot of choice because I was unconscious for a fair bit of it. But you know, I came to the conclusion, I didn't start one single drama that I can remember during that time, and that is such a change for me. And there's just one last thing I wanted to say. Yeah, I've learned self-acceptance. Maybe sometimes I accept myself a bit too easily, and possibly what is needed is the other end of the serenity prayer to change the things I can. But none of it stops me from staying clean. You know, I'm getting older. I'm getting a lot of the problems that older people get. I haven't been kind to my body or my mind. And it shows. But I became, there was a reading about the seventh step recently, or you know, it related to that in one of the meetings I was at, and it came to you know, defect, well, it was about defects of character. And for me, one of my greatest defects of character, possibly the greatest, was arrogance. And I've had some relief with that. It's not gone, but how that could play out for me was when I got something wrong or I made a mistake, I would beat myself up so much I'd be useless for weeks, depending on the fallout of the whatever mistake it was. And speaking to my sponsor, it came to me that that was part of my arrogance, because I thought that I was so perfect. I had to be so perfect and maintain that facade of perfection, you know, to the outside world. And I didn't want you to see me getting it wrong. Didn't want you to see me making a mistake. And that's what the beating up was about. So I've learned not to be so hard on myself. I am where I'm at. My life is such as it is, which is a fantastic life. You know, I totally please myself. I answer to no one. And, you know, I worked most of my using, apart from the last couple of years, up until my late 50s. And I always had to be somewhere and do something for somebody else. Now I don't have to worry about work anymore. I'm my own boss, and I've kind of got the life I always wanted, which was just me and animals. I do speak to people. I'm quite comfortable living on my own, but I do have people in my life. And but that was kind of my dream as a child, and I've got it. And I wouldn't have any of it without any. So I think I've shared for quite long enough. That was a lot longer than I thought I was going to share. I don't know what I've said, but thanks for asking, Jay and Tammy. And love you guys. I'll leave it there.